Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Malia White, real-life bosun and cast member on Bravo's Below Deck Med. Working in my industry can be very interesting. These are my stories. As you'll find out, my world is a total ship show.
Alrighty, welcome back to Total Ship Show. I'm Malia White.
I'm Amanda Logan.
And today we have a very special guest, Dave from Below Deck. Well, we all know him from Below Deck, but yeah, that's not why we have you on, Dave. Don't worry. Dave, why don't you quickly catch us up on where you're at in the world right now?
What's up? Thanks for having me, starters. I'm basically in my mum and dad's house where I grew up in a small town called Burgess Hill. I just came back to London to get my O-1 visa, which was approved. And then there was a nightmare of it kind of got refused. And now, 20 minutes ago, it just got reapproved.
Yay.
20 minutes ago.
So I've been so stressed. My poor mum and dad, I've just been like a right grouch. Just go to the gym every day, just like, but now, honestly, I'm so pumped because I've had to change my flight so many times. I just wasn't sure what was going to happen.
So the O-1 is for working. How's the B-1, B-2 is for the boats, right? But O-1's for working in the States. Okay.
Yeah, so B1, B2, basically, you can work in America, but only on the water.
Okay.
And then an O-1 means that you don't need, like, someone to sponsor you. So the O-1, you can just work for yourself anywhere in America.
Okay.
So you can just do full freelance. So I can do, like, pop-ups in different restaurants. I can put on my own events. And basically do anything I want, which is
awesome. Nice. Is that your plan? Are you going to be working in a restaurant or doing pop-ups, or are you going to be...
Yeah, so the plan eventually is to open my own restaurant in Florida towards like Jupiter Way. That's my plan.
Yeah.
But I've got lots of pop-ups for like LA, Boston, and New York lined up.
Awesome.
So far.
Very
That'll
cool.
be really fun. Come to Denver. Do one in Denver or Aspen.
Yeah. I'd love to. Keen. Love Denver.
Yeah. I have some friends who have restaurants, so seriously.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'd
Amanda.
Love that.
Amanda's a huge foodie, which is partly why we've always wanted to have a chef on Below Deck, on Total Ship Show, and yeah, I'm still working in the industry, and I think that your position has got to be one of the hardest on board, and yeah, we just kind of wanted to pick your brain and explain to viewers exactly what it's like to be a super yacht chef, not necessarily one that has cameras following him, but one that works in the industry, knows what it's like, and kind of explain it.
Yeah, no, but you know what, being on a chef on a yacht is definitely hard. I think being on a 50 meter is probably the hardest vessel, because if you go look 5 more meters, then all of a sudden you get sous chef, right?
Yeah.
Being on a 50, sometimes you still have up to 12 crew, but normally it's between 9 and 10. So you've got to obviously cook for the crew, and then obviously you've got the same amount of guests. So 50 meter is like, that's like the king of power hardness, I guess. If you can do that, then you can work on any other size yacht, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, it's super hard. But luckily, if you've got a good crew, normally the other crew always come in and they always happily help out. Normally, the engineers will just be hanging out in the galley, helping you peel potatoes and helping you do some dishes every now and then.
Yeah, they have a lot of time on their hands.
Honestly, the last one I just did, actually, they didn't. There was like a leak in the roof, and it was in the deckheads. it was a nightmare. They were busy. But yes. No, it's a vibe. I do love it. I do find it hard being generally like being on a yacht. Like I miss like sunrises, the sunsets. Cause I don't do it as much anymore. But it's so hard not having your own cabin. I think that's just the hardest thing.
Yeah. I'm so curious too, Dave, like how did you get into this? Like we were just talking about how you used to be a pro skier and now you're a chef, and that's like quite a big difference.
There
it is, the medal.
The medal.
Oh, awesome.
I left the UK when I was 18, moved to France, but I did 3 years in college, did my MVQ 1, 2, and 3, level 3 is pastry. And then I'd do 5 days a week, split shifts in a Rosette restaurant. So it was like 18 hours a day and then 1 day a week in college. Did that for 3 years. It was hard graft, half lines, in and out of trouble all the time as well. So it was a pretty gnarly upbringing. And I got an opportunity to leave. So I left, like I just said, when I was 18. Went to the French Alps and worked in a hotel where I'd do split shifts and I'd ski in the afternoon. And I'd never skied before. So I just did it every day and I loved it, fell in love with it. And then, yeah, I got to a pretty good level. And
wait, you'd never skied until you were 18 and then you became a professional skier?
I turned pro in 2014.
That's insane.
But
who are you?
It's the truth, I promise.
So you're an athlete then?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely was anyway. But then I got hit with so many injuries, multiple injuries. I've had so many surgeries, 2 fake knees, broken back.
All from skiing?
But yeah, all from broken backs for skydiving. My parachute didn't open.
Don't tell me that. I'm about to go skydiving next week. Don't tell me that.
Wait, I want to hear the story though.
No, Dave.
Are you gonna go skydiving in Gap? Where are you gonna go?
Is that the place your chute didn't open? Because I can cancel it.
No, it was in Florida. Florida.
Oh, that's
well, that
surprising.
Checks out. Yeah.
Where are you gonna go, Malia?
We are going. It's not far from here. It's like an hour from La Ciota. And you could do the 15,000 free fall.
It must be Gap, sure, like close to L'Azur.
Yeah.
Well, L'Azur, Gap's insane, and it's been snowing so much at 3,000 meters, so the backdrop will be sick.
Okay,
it's going to be so good. I'm so jealous. That's awesome.
I'm very excited, but I haven't been skydiving. The last time I went skydiving was in Colorado, so I haven't been in a while, so I am a little nervous. But
it's just, they got small planes too, so it'll be pretty stuffy in it.
That's Malia's real fear is flying.
I hate flying.
She's less afraid of jumping out of the plane than she is getting in it when it goes up.
I'm a huge adrenaline junkie. I hate flying, mostly because I just don't trust commercial pilots. But
fair enough. But maybe you could fly it yourself and then just switch out, jump out.
If I could, I would. I think it's a control thing, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
You'll be fine. You'll be absolutely fine. They're like probably some of the best pilots in the world in that part of the air, sure.
Yeah.
You'll be fine. you will be.
Okay,
I won't finish the story.
I want to hear the end of the story.
Well, I mean, I kind of got the gist of it. You jumped out of the plane. Your chute didn't open. You broke your back.
So I got over 300 jumps and I got this amazing black canopy. I love black, right? I love black and white.
Same.
Don't have much color to me.
Oh, okay. You two are the same.
So, I jumped out, everything was fine. And then I pulled my shoe and I had a malfunction. I tried to correct it, couldn't correct it. I kept trying and trying and trying because I didn't want to lose this black parachute. I got really low. I was like, fuck. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to have to swear. And then I had to cut away. I cut away at like 700 feet. So by the time I cut away, pulled my reserve, I was like 500 feet under canopy. And I was just over a sea of trees. So it was either that or a swamp. I'm in Florida. I didn't go into the swamp. Fuck that. There's fucking alligators everywhere.
Yay.
And snakes.
And swamp people.
Exactly. And it's not what you see on TV. I didn't like hang up in the tree. I wasn't going super fast. I hit the turn my body sideways, hit the tree sideways, smashed my helmet to pieces. Woke up in the hospital. But it was I struggled with my bad back for ages, and I had surgery after my first trip to Mount Everest. They put a spring in my back, and ever since then I've kind of had lots of problems. And I had this surgery in Miami Hospital. And it was incredible. I've never had no back pain since. I got two gnarly scars, which are pretty sick, and they fused my lower spine. And honestly, I haven't had no sciatica, no back pain since.
Oh my gosh, who's this doctor? I should probably go to them for my sciatica.
Or maybe you need to jump out of a plane without a working parachute.
It's there in Mount Sinai, and it did it, man. They were like literally talking to each other, and I was in this room with them, like, we're going to do this, we really want to do this. So, like, super excited about it. I was like, fuck, have you done this before? Honestly, it was incredible.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Well, makes me super excited to go skydiving.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in the chef stuff, but I'm more interested in talking to you about all this other crazy shit you've done.
Everest. You've climbed Everest, right?
Climbed Everest, did the north side, yeah.
Mm.
North side. I was meant to go back this year with Nims from 14 Peaks, and we were going to do the highest ever dinner party, 8,000 meters. But it fell through last minute, so it's back on the cards for next year due to funding, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay.
So fingers crossed for next year.
Yeah. Nice. So, that's epic.
Yeah.
Okay, let's ask you a chef question.
Okay.
So I think just kind of important to start off with, maybe just what your daily schedule looks like, because I know what it's like for our chef, and just kind of explain to people what the chef is. This is a funny question to ask, but what the chef does, because people just assume you just cook for the guests, or, you know, kind of explain.
Okay. So, like, if I was on charter or?
Yeah, I think charter, like, yeah. And then we'll kind of ask you, like, what provisioning is like and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay. If I was on charter, first thing I'd do would wake up at 4 a.m. and then I'd start getting my bread together. I'm always trying to make a sourdough and a wholemeal and then a white. Or like a ciabatta.
Every day.
So I get all the bread good every day on charter. Wow. I refuse to buy frozen bread. So it makes such a huge difference, you know, to even when I go to a restaurant, when you get given a hot bread, it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
Like, to some people, it might not sound, oh, it doesn't matter, but it really does. You know, you put your butter on there and it melts.
And
you
can
just tell
it's
super fresh. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Like, so that's the first thing. Up, bread proving. And the hardest thing about a boat is the air con. So the galley is always really cold. It's always about, I don't know, American temperature, but it's about 17 degrees, right? So I don't know what it is. So that's the hardest thing. So if you don't have the space, or sometimes I've been proving bread in my cabin in the shower, I've had to, like, it is actually a bit of a nightmare. A lot of galleys, you have like big ovens where you have the space, but some aren't as big as others. So anyway, start proving your bread, start baking your bread. And then the first thing is start doing breakfast prep for the guests. You never know when they're going to wake up. So that entails, you can either make your pastries, your pain au chocolat, croissants, pain au raisin, or you can buy, that's one thing I do buy, to be honest, because of the timing. You can buy like pastries that aren't proved. So you get them out, then improve and whatnot. Anyway, you get a grips of breakfast prep. There's a big variety, lots of stuff goes out, huge array, and then the guys wake up and they're going to order anything they want. So you're by yourself, 12 people chuck 12 orders at you at once, and they all want different things.
Yeah.
And then while that's happening, sometimes you do crew breakfast, don't always have to do it. So then you start writing your menu for lunch. So you start prepping for crew lunch and guest lunch. Sometimes, depending on how busy I am, I tend to do like similar lunches for guests and crew, just so you double prep, and then use high profile or high quality meat for, say, for example, like a Wagyu, if I was doing a Wagyu steak, and then I'd use like a USDA American cut for the crew. But crew food's also, no, it's still good. It's still good quality.
No.
I mean, it's not like, it's not your Japanese bread. I'm trying to make it. An example, a lot of boats you have to have budgets for the crew, but it's also really important. I'm not one of those chefs who's like, oh, here you go, the crew, the frozen
you get
pizza.
A hot dog, Malia.
I feel like every time I've been on a boat, I always do look after the crew, and it's really, really important, sometimes more so than the guests. You know, the crew morale is super important, and I don't get chefs who power shit food for crew, because all they're going to do is talk shit about you anyway.
That's
like, why
true.
On earth would you want to do that to one of your fellow crewmates? And it creates such animosity between the crew, and it's so unnecessary.
Especially for the guys
who are on deck and the engineers who are slaving away in the sun, you know, it's bullshit. Do your fucking job and do a good crew meal.
And especially, honestly, like, as a chef, like, it doesn't take you any more energy to make something taste amazing. So why wouldn't you just make it amazing for them? Like,
I feel like some chefs have this arrogance and this persona just be a, oh, I can't say that word.
You can.
You can. The C
word. It's a bad one. It's bad. Yeah, it's bad.
No, I was going to say, on being on deck, like on charter, when, like, you know, deck crew, if you send a few guys down for lunch, if they come back and they have negative things to say, it's like, you don't hear the end of it. It's like, fucking chef, it's just pasta again. Like, all there was pasta and bread. Like, or like vice versa, they'll be like, oh, there was just salad. And like, I'm starving.
That's no
doesn't
meat.
He know I'm working my ass off? I'm out here sweating all day. And it's like,
I totally get it though. Like, it's especially if it's South Africa, it's just me, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine, you know. Like, I totally get it, but it's so easy for, especially if you got no charter guests on. Like, it's your job. That's why you get paid what you do. You know, you should be able to multitask and put out variety. Like, it's your job. Do it. You know, and that's this. Like, if you can't do it, then be a sous chef, I guess.
Yeah, the good ones can do it though. Like, I know our chef always tries to do like two different types of proteins, a salad, a bread, like carb, something. It's always such a good variety. And sometimes, on charter, our sous chef is super, super busy and doesn't always make, you know, they put out things quickly because they have to, which is totally understandable. We all have bad days, but it just impacts the rest of the crew the most.
No, which is, and it's important. We're a team, and the morale is huge. So it's huge. So long days, people are kind of lacking in sleep. It's important. You know, you got to stick together and call it the engine room. You know, you got to, it's hard graft. Got to feed the crew well.
One thing that people see us do on Below Deck is the preference sheets, right? And we get asked this all the time, like, oh, well, but you had their preference sheet. In your experience in yachting, how often have you gotten an accurate or filled out preference sheet, or like, tell us a funny thing, or kind of explain the preference sheet to people?
The preference sheet is quite funny. The char, I'm going to talk to the recently I just did. We had an incident where they're like, oh, it was more to do with the bar. But no one ever fills it out properly. They're just like, I eat anything. But when it comes to it, you know, they are quite demanding. Like the one recently, they wanted frozen pizzas so they could eat it at 4 a.m. Apparently, that's what these guests wanted. So that's quite a funny one. Another one was apple pies from McDonald's. They wanted that and nothing else. They didn't want like homemade, like nice apple pie, good pastry.
Ew.
So I'm actually a bit of a fan of McDonald's, believe it or not. Only because it's consistent.
The apple pie, though?
And it's the apple is shocking. But I just feel as it being an affordable, consistent kind of snack. I think, you know, it just stays the same. Consistently bad, but I, you know, it's just not what.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I was going to get McDonald's delivered to my yacht, I would be like, I'll have chicken nuggets, not the apple pie.
Exactly.
But also McDonald's, like in Europe, is so much better than McDonald's in America.
Yeah, I
like
second
the beef
that.
Is so much better. Like everything is so much better. Like you eat there and you don't get sick. Here, you couldn't pay me.
I'm gonna totally butcher this, but they have the, what is it, the croque monsieur?
Croque monsieur, yeah.
Yeah,
that was good.
They have that here at the McDonald's.
That's kind of cool.
No, not yet. I will try it though while I'm in France. But
but that's what I'm saying. When you go in a restaurant, you know, I'm happy to pay a lot of money for a meal. You kind of sometimes expect not to be like upset or disappointed. So that's the kind of the point. It's something that Anthony Bourdain said once, you know, and he's kind of right. He kind of made a valid point.
Yeah.
Preference
sheet's a joke. That's
well, and also I think it's just so hard for people to be like at the top of their head, what do I love and what do I hate? You know, it's like, I'm sure there's things that I don't like, but I don't think like, I don't like pickled okra, but I wouldn't like think about that, you know, when I'm filling out a sheet, but you never know what they're going to make you. But I'm curious about, yeah, like how do you order your provisions and what is that process like? Like how do you budget that? That seems stressful for me.
So if you, a lot of the time, you need, they all ask for like the last ones, they wanted like a steak night, and then some people were allowed to shellfish. So that's like kind of valid information that you need. But then there's always going to be, don't be shellfish, but that, no, there's a, there'll always be someone that still wants lobster, for example. So you still have to get it. And there was. So you just got to, I guess you just got to use your, it depends on how much space you have as well. Like a lot of the bigger yachts have a walk-in fridge or a walk-in freezer, so you can really get in a lot of backup products. And then if you have a lot of stuff left over, you can kind of send it to the owners or send it to the crew guys. You can do a transfer budget list. But you also don't want to over-order because, again, it makes it harder for everyone else if you get lots of crew provisions on and stuff. So you do need to think about it. But there's a lot of general things that you just have to get it. You've got to make sure you have on backup. So what I normally do is I'll write a 7-day menu plan and I'll provision for that. And then, like I just said, even though they didn't want lobster, I still got in 12 fresh lobsters. I blanched them, I prepped them, I got off the shell, and then I backpacked them and froze them just in case, just to have backup.
Yeah.
And especially if you're going around places like Bahamas, you can't really get that good produce. It's shocking. You honestly can't even get like good mahi-mahi from a supplier there for some reason, unless you catch your own. Like, it's so frustrating. So again, I'll get all my fishing from a reliable fishmonger in Florida, and then we can get it blast frozen. And that's just a backup, just in case. And if you do get fresh fish, then great. You just got to cover yourself because you don't want to be in there, I'll find some fresh fish at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
You don't know that. You need to really cover your back. Again, it's a thinking of the other crew too. I don't want to send out Malia to go to a fishmonger for me in the south of France just in case it was raining and she couldn't get me any fresh fish.
Right.
I can't even, and I don't have time to do it.
Yeah.
So you just gotta just be thoughtful. You just be knowledgeable,
well,
I guess.
And forgive me if this is a stupid question, but do they teach you that in culinary school? Like, do they teach you how to plan and actually do the shopping, like for people who run restaurants or work on a yacht?
If you
become a head chef in a restaurant in London or whatnot, you will have to locally source, and you will get suppliers that will come round and give you different booklets and magazines of products. So you have to go to different markets and source your own produce. It's different on yachting. It is when I joined. It's actually one thing I struggled with, you know, going to America, getting a huge car because all the cars are so big compared to UK and Europe. Driving on the other side of the road, it's just so different. It is super overwhelming. So there is lots of like yacht groups and chef WhatsApp groups and stuff who are really helpful and kind of guide you in the right direction. It is a big family yachting. Like, you do, it is a nice community and people are willing to help. So it is very different. It is very different to a restaurant provisioning. Obviously, there's an easy way to do it. You can just call someone up and be like, I just have this. Can you bring it to the boat?
Yeah.
So there's ways around it. And that's fine if you're on a back-to-back charter and you've only got like an hour or 24 hours to turn the boat around. Then you would need to get an agent that's provisioned for. And it's very different. So you do, the more you stay in, so if you go to the Med side or you Caribbean side, if you have done a couple of seasons either side and got to know a couple of provisioners or a couple of markets, it's really, really helpful to learn the provision.
Right now, neither of our head chefs drive, and it is one of the most frustrating things.
Such a nightmare.
One of you guys have to get them, like take them to the market every time?
Stewardess has to take them,
Yeah.
It's so frustrating. Okay,
and they both on board. And they both on board now as well.
They're rotational, yeah. So
okay.
Yeah.
Neither of the rotational chefs drive.
Neither one of the head chefs know. The sous chef's the only one that drives. But obviously he has to stay back to prep, like, you know. It's so funny. It's actually a mission. Like every single time we're like, Carl, go get provisions, and he's like, yeah, I can't, obviously. I have to take Katie with me. And I'm like,
Your galley is the best galley I've worked in.
It is amazing, to be fair.
It's such a sight.
That's another question. Like, I've literally never stepped foot on a yacht before. So as far as the galleys and all of that, like, I mean, are they all kind of similar or set up the same, or is every galley drastically different?
They're so different. Honestly, the one I was on below deck was the worst I've ever been in. I can't believe my luck.
It looks really crammed.
It was so small. I brought my own thermo mix and I brought my own CV machine. If I didn't bring that, I would have been screwed. Honestly, I had four hobs and I had one stand-up freezer, one stand-up fridge. And then there was just that tiny little center island.
Yeah.
And that was a 50 meter. It was so, we had to put everything in like the gangway, which pissed everyone off.
Yeah.
But there was just nowhere to put anything. So it's a good question, because some galleys are insane. And a lot of them have walk-in freezers downstairs, walk-in fridges, walk-in freezers. Some of them have big open fridges in the galley because they've got lots of space. What people should do is let chefs design galleys, basically, because that's still not a thing, and it should be. It's because it would make a huge difference.
I remember when Tom, my ex, Tom, when he went onto his new boat, the galley had no windows.
Wow.
And that's awful.
No windows. Yeah, and it was a brand new boat, new build, and he said the galley was awful. And obviously now in hindsight, I'm like, fuck you. But I'm just saying, like, ours, you're right, our galley is amazing. It has three big windows that the chefs can look out at and lots of space. We've got tons of walk-in freezers. It's nice.
Two big rationale ovens. Like, it's so nice. It's a dream to work.
Yeah. I honestly can't even imagine cooking with other people in a small space. Like, I do love to cook, but Malia knows. I'm get the fuck.
I sit in the living
kitchen.
Room and drink wine.
Yeah. Like, I'm so, people are always like, let me help. And I'm like, I don't need help. I just need you out of my way. That's all I need. So I'm always like, you know, I just, when I see like kitchens and restaurants, I'm like, man, they just know how to maneuver, I guess. But
Dave, to give you my level of cooking, the other day I learned that you can put raw meat in a crock pot. I didn't know this was a thing. I had pickles for dinner. Like, so bad.
Dolmas and hummus.
Yeah.
Do you eat everything, Bella?
I don't eat seafood. I don't eat lamb. Yeah, my chef's like, I pretty much don't eat seafood. Although I will admit, I had scallops for the first time the other night, and I loved them.
You also had a fish recently that you liked. You tried something.
Finding Nemo.
Oh, it was in Colorado. You had a fish that you liked.
I did.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was, but you even went back and had a second bite. I want to say it might have been a halibut, maybe.
Mm. Yeah, I don't mind a white fish, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that might have been what it was. We were
halibut's
at a restaurant.
Quite strong, though. Halibut's quite a strong smelling fish.
Oh,
yeah.
It's like,
but
it's quite similar to cod.
Yeah.
I don't really mind fish so much, but I won't eat anything with like an exoskeleton, like a shrimp or like a lobster. I don't know. I'm definitely not going to do an oyster anytime soon.
Oh, I love oysters.
Yeah.
That's fair enough, then.
Okay, so I obviously haven't had great luck with chefs in the past. Do you think there's anything true? Everyone thinks chefs are crazy. Is there anything to that? Or is it just because you guys work your asses off, you think?
I don't know. I've worked with a lot of crazy chefs. I mean, I'm pretty crazy, too. I used to be... I feel like you can change as well. Like, the way you get brought into being a chef, like back in the day, it wasn't as bad when I was coming into it. It's pretty brutal. Like, you get bullied for years.
Seems
like you
it.
Do. It's pretty. It's
really?
Pretty brutal. Yeah, it's hectic.
Why do you get bullied?
Like most of them I know have like a drinking problem, a smoking problem.
Yeah, like
other problems.
I think I might be like one of the only athletic chefs in the world. Maybe.
Actually, my head chef now is one of the most athletic people I know too. So, but he doesn't, and he doesn't drink. So,
wow. Oh, right.
He's like a rare
Rare
it's
breed.
Crazy though. But
well, and to your defense, I mean, Malia's always said, you know, I've asked her a bunch of times, well, you know, what do you think is the hardest job on a yacht? And she's said chef, you know, like it just seems so hard.
But I also think it's just so foreign to me. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
True. You don't know how to
use a crock.
It is difficult. Like, it's not easy, but you kind of are used to it, you know? So your timing and your being precise and your. I mean, a lot of it comes down to timing and knowledge, right? If someone asks for something, you should be able to say yes. You shouldn't really say no, and you shouldn't get annoyed about it. You shouldn't get annoyed about your crew. I think that's really important. When I was head chef in Corsica, I had 30 chefs below me, and I was I was a horrible man. Like, I was not a nice person. You know, that's like the hotel industry, and coming back into yachting and then being in private residencies, I grew as a person too. I've become a nicer person. But it's just different. You don't have to be like that. You don't get anywhere being like that. Like, so it's important to be down to earth and communicate. Otherwise, you're never going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So
and that just really comes important with maturity and experience, I think, too, you know?
No,
like,
yeah.
Like,
no,
you learn. A lot easier to get people to do what you need them to do if you ask them respectfully.
But I guarantee you 80%, let's say 70% of chefs out there are like what I was like when I was 23.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was pretty fiery when I was 23 too, though. Okay. So everyone's favorite question. What's the most ridiculous question or guest request you've ever had?
Apart from the apple pie one, it's a tough question.
I'd want to know, like, the most ridiculous thing they asked you to make.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I know personally we had to fly in, like, fresh fruit in Fiji once because they didn't want it from, like, the local market. Like, there's just crazy requests that we get.
Okay. I'll tell you a story about a bunch of Russian people I had on the yacht I was working on, and all they wanted was goat's product. And we were in Turkey in a port called Göcek. And basically, I had to get fresh goat's milk because I had to make goat's gelato. I had to make fresh goat's yogurt, and it had to be made on the yacht. So I went round Göcek in Turkey into Bodrum, Dalaman, searching for goats that I could milk because I couldn't get fresh goat's milk. So I was running around with this Coca-Cola bowl milking goats. And then I swear down, and it was the most weirdest thing I've ever done.
Did you know how to milk a goat, or did you?
No. Well, but obviously, like, I
you
was
just
with
pull
the
on the teat. You just pull on the teat.
I mean, obviously, you've had girlfriends before, so.
I was with the captain, and he spoke Turkish, and his wife was Turkish. So he kind of knew where we were going and stuff. And tamam, that's all I can remember.
That is fucking hilarious.
And honest, but I'll tell you what, though, it did actually make really good gelato. Goat's gelato was really good. And then the same people would always come in and be like, we want papaya, and always have to have this, like, this perfect precise papaya. But that's probably the best story I can tell.
You should have worn a GoPro on your head for
it
that.
I should have done. But to be honest, they also, like, I was baking this goat's milk, doing the fermentation overnight, 54 degrees with, like, the Activate, and it made really good yogurt in the pots and the clay pots. So it kind of, I learned some stuff from our guests, but it was weird.
That's
was fucking
so
weird.
Funny.
It was super
you
weird.
Just, oh my god, some random people's goats.
Can you imagine? You're like a goat, you know, goat farmer, and you go outside. There's just some random dude with a Coke bottle.
Yeah.
Oh my god. That is too funny. I love it.
But obviously, you get the weird requests as well. People just when they go, sometimes they don't care. They just want what they normally have, right? They don't want anything fancy.
Yeah.
So you do get some funny requests.
Yeah.
That's
fair. And okay, so we've both done Below Deck. How was your experience, like, just overall, just a quick one? What did you think?
It was an experience. It opened up a lot of doors. It was tough. It's one of the hardest things I've ever done, actually. Mentally was really, I found it really, really difficult. If I wasn't good at my job, I would have 100% failed miserably. Like, it was because I was so, I just love my job and I'm so passionate about cooking. It really kind of just about kept me kind of sane. It really kind of kept me together. I could just fully focus on what I had to do. Because it really is so, no one will ever understand. Imagine working on a yacht on steroids with a bunch of cameras following you around with a bunch of people you've never worked with before. Like, yeah. Surely that should be enough how to explain how hard it is. You walk onto the yacht and in 24 hours you pick up charter. You haven't even provisioned yet.
You don't even know the boat. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Like, that's what happens. People think it's all like film, that it's fake. It's not. You're literally designed to fail.
Yeah.
With some women dramas or men dramas and just thrown on top of it and hormones and whatever.
It's really, really.
But coming, I kind of got through it and I'm really proud of myself for not leaving. I tried to leave twice. Sandy actually talked me out of it.
Every chef does.
Yeah. And I was just like, well, I'm in here. Because like, I don't need to be here. I can cook. I love to cook. But I'm so glad I did stick it out, because when I finished filming, I went to a place called Sayita in Caribbean, Mexico. I just surfed these long left-handers for a month.
Nice.
And I just couldn't be around anyone. I just had to be by myself. I couldn't even socialize with anyone. That's how broken I was. I was literally broken after the experience. And I've climbed Everest, for fuck's sake. I was broke. It broke me. And I came back from that so strong. Like, I almost felt like a new person from it, to be honest, which was cool.
Yeah. You can ask me, like, every time after filming, I did the same thing. I would go, like, lay on a beach in Hawaii and just not. I just want to be in nature. I don't want to hear one thing about a yacht, a TV show. I don't want to hear a radio call.
cut yourself off from everything just to try and unwind. I can't imagine. Yeah, I mean, props to you guys for being able to do that. I know. I mean, Malia knows me. I don't think I could do it. I'd kill someone.
I think you'll be surprised. It does, like, six weeks feels like a lifetime.
Yeah. I can't. I mean, I even having like two straight days with people, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go to my room and like read my book for an hour. And I'm an extrovert, but man, I don't know. I mean, not having any personal space, you guys are impressive.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but honestly, it is fun to film.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does open up opportunities for sure.
It really does, you know, and I met some incredible people, and from a mental side, for me to be vulnerable and in front of so many people, like a lot of people open up to me and they were saying, thank you. And that's really cool to see on a reality show. So it's not fake, and to show your emotion, more people need to do that, which is really, really awesome as well. Which I took a lot from that. And I kind of hope I help a lot of people being that vulnerable. So,
right.
So that was in itself is enough. So,
yeah. Right. That's one of the benefits. So like one of the rewards to doing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I am grateful Malia did it, because I get to meet all these amazing people now.
Yeah.
Would you go back on, Malia? I'm not allowed to ask questions.
Yeah, of course you are. You're allowed to ask questions. What questions do you want to ask? Yeah. I don't know. It's tricky for me because I just got my chief mate's ticket and I'm pretty serious about it. So I don't know. It has to be the right option. Yeah.
I'm super proud of you as well, by the way. That's awesome. Oh, what you've done is really incredible.
I just got rotation, so like unless it's happening when I have time off, I'm definitely not leaving my job for but we'll see. If they want a female chief officer,
captain.
Then yeah,
female captain
or captain, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, then I'd do it for sure.
We'll see.
Was that your only question?
Oh, is it? Well, yeah. I mean, do you live in Colorado? You live in Denver as well?
Kind of. Amanda and I are old college roommates, so I stay with Amanda every time. I always go back for ski season. I try to make it back at least once in the summer as well. So it's like my second home.
Yeah.
Actually, it's kind of my first home.
Kind of. It's kind of like your home base that's not on the boat, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's home for you then? Where's your other home?
I own a home in Florida, but I don't really like Florida. I mean, I love Florida, but I'm just kind of traveling. I don't know.
You're just cruising.
Yeah, yep. I work Like my boat's my home base, and then I just kind of plan adventures in my time off.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So you're going to learn to fly then, are you? Is that your plan?
I've taken a few flying lessons, but I should probably keep going. So I'm not so scared. Yeah. We'll see. Okay. Anything else? I think we're hitting that mark. Yeah.
Yeah. I have my Spanish class in 10 minutes.
You have a Spanish class?
Yeah. Yeah, Malia, I haven't told you. I hired a Spanish tutor. I'm so excited.
Wow. We can speak Spanish together.
Yeah. I'm doing it like 3 times a week. I love it.
What are you learning right now?
It's just like full immersion. Like, because I took years of Spanish, and so I know a lot of the words. I just don't know how to actually put it all together. So we just
Yay.
Talk. We literally
Practice
just talk.
Me.
I will. I love it. I'm so excited about it.
Good.
You should go. Have you been to Barcelona? Have you been over to anywhere
yeah.
in Spain?
Oh yeah.
That's sick as Barcelona. I love Barcelona.
I love Barcelona, and I love like so my city. And my tutor is in Mexico, so we just do it over Zoom.
Oh wow.
And it's so great. I have a friend who's been doing it for a while now, and she's become fluent, and so I'm thrilled. If anyone needs a tutor, let me know.
Let's go live in Spain for a little bit.
Yeah, San Sebastian of Barcelona.
Oh, awesome.
I think Seville, the south of Spain in Seville, is one of my favorite places.
I've only been to Barcelona, and I loved it. So beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go.
I have a passport. And I'm stuck.
All right. All right. Well, Dave, thank you for coming on. I hope that anyone that's interested in being a yacht chef or just in yachting in general has kind of had a better idea of what the job entails. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's a pleasure finally getting to meet you.
One day
we'll have to meet
thank
each other in person.
Absolutely.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we've been wanting to chef on here forever. So thank you so much for making the time.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Maybe I'll see you in that plane, Nalia.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll see you in Spain.
Yeah.
Or Florida. I'm all over the place.
Or Colorado. Come to Colorado.
Colorado.
We'll get you set up with
definitely.
A chef out here. Do a pop up.
I love that. I love Breckenridge too. So I'll be there for sure.
I head to the States soon. I'll be in like LA, New York. I don't know where else. Colorado. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, girls.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Awesome. Legends.
A Huda Media Production.